And when I looked closer, there was a Sasquatch face on the other side, and it was looking right back in at us.
Staring back at me is a silhouette of a very, very giant monkey.
An intriguing discovery is being investigated in a community east of Seattle. Someone came across a lengthy trail of extremely large footprints.
They are up there.
Welcome, everyone. You've tuned into the Nicola Valley Bigfoot Podcast, a place where your encounters are told. To share your encounter and to be on the show, email me at nicolavalleybigfoot@gmail.com. Now, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, my name is Charles, and I grew up in the Shuswap region of British Columbia. I have been interested in Sasquatch my whole life. I grew up watching Monster Quest and the like. I had a couple close calls with Sasquatch, but I've never actually had a sighting. My first possible encounter with Sasquatch was I was out in my hunting area, and my dad and I hunt this really steep hillside, and so no other person goes there, and it benches off like three times. So way down on the bottom bench, I decided to set my trail camera up to see what kind of white-tailed deer activity I could get on the camera. And I'm very conscious of bears messing with trail cameras, so I went above and beyond to go out of my way to set this trail camera high up on a tree. So I had it about 7.5 feet off the ground, tilted down with a wedge behind it. And so I set this trail camera up, and I left it alone for a couple weeks. And I came back to look for it with one of my best friends. And when we got to the tree, the trail camera was actually gone. The strap was still hanging on the bark of the tree, but the buckle itself had been snapped right off. And so I immediately started thinking someone stole my camera, and I got very upset and angry. And so I started doing a circular pattern search around the tree to look for the camera if by chance it was an animal. So as I was doing this spiral search outward, I actually did find the trail camera, and it was down by a fallen over tree about 20 yards down the hill. And when I found it, the case had actually been opened up. So to open the case of the trail camera, you need fingers to actually undo the latches, two of them. So it's not just like a chance thing that maybe a bear had done. So right off the bat, my suspicions were thrown. I took the trail camera back home, and of course I wanted to check the photos right away. And I got four anomalous photos with a tiny clump of hair in the one corner of the frame. And then the rest of the photos were all of sky. So nothing definitive.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. really too bad.
Yeah. Did you ever get that photo? I mean, as minimal as it was, just with a tuft of hair, like, did you ever have it like analyzed, like the photo itself, like maybe zoomed into a high, you know, high resolution, anything like that?
No, I've never done that.
Oh, maybe it's something we can look into, but anyway, sorry, continue, please. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no worries. Fast forward maybe a year or two from there, and same mountainside, there's a campsite on a lake further down the hill. And me and all my friends were out down there camping. So we probably had a dozen of us down there. And me and one of my friends decided to go nighttime spearfishing. And so we broke off from the group and we took our flashlights and we had these homemade spears that we had carved around by the fire. And we're waist deep in the lake and we're looking for carp, just having fun. And there's a creek inlet that comes off the mountainside that drains into the lake. And while we're out there in the quiet, away from everybody else, we start hearing this guttural growl that kind of sounds like a wild boar, but not quite. And that didn't make a lot of sense to either of us because we don't have wild boar in this area. It was both setting us off on edge, like making us nervous. So we decided to, cut our losses and just go back to the fire with everybody else. But we kind of just left it at that. We didn't think too much into it. We told everyone at the fire and they just said, oh, you know, maybe it was just a bear or something. So fast forward again, same hillside. Just this last fall, I had ordered a new scope for my hunting rifle, and it got to me quite late. So I was sighting my rifle in October when the hunting season's already going. And I had Fridays off at the time, so I went out on a Friday about midday because I didn't want to ruin anybody's hunt while they were out there. I found a nice secluded hillside where nobody would be, and I can actually see the backdrop where my bullet would go. And granted, this is like a couple hundred yards stone throw away from where the trail camera was. So as I'm shooting and zeroing in my crosshair on the target, I'm got my hearing protection on and I'm looking up the hill, and I just noticed this cedar tree just start shaking and thrashing violently. Back and forth. But I couldn't hear anything. So if there was a scream or anything, I wouldn't have heard it. But nothing makes sense as to why that tree was shaking, because I don't know a single animal out in the forest that would stick around when I'm shooting a 30-06, you know, a dozen times. So even though I had that gun in my hand, I did not feel brave enough to crest that hill and see what was shaking the tree.
Yeah. Anything that's capable of rocking a tree to that degree is probably something that's best left alone, in my opinion. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it was probably in the best of moods at the time.
Well, Charles, let me ask you something. You've had some occurrences happen, some incidents while you're out in the woods. I mean, with their, you know, sighting in your rifle and spear fishing, you've had some things happen. Like, what did you attribute it to? Like, what did you think it was? I mean, your mind must have been trying to make sense of what was going on. So what did you think at the time? Let's start with the first time. Like, what did you think happened there?
Well, the trail camera, I thought, you know, maybe this could be a Sasquatch. After I had reviewed the photos and, you know, you really think about it, and there's no teeth or claw marks damaging that trail camera, and it must have been opened with fingers. I don't think a human would do that. So I thought that was maybe Sasquatch. I didn't think the incident in the lake was until I started listening to Sasquatch Chronicles, and I heard other people report hearing the same sound associated with seeing a Sasquatch. So, you know, it's kind of reflecting backwards. It's the thing that makes sense.
Yeah, like hindsight is 20/20 sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, a good example of this is probably my best encounter. It was probably the closest I ever got. I was out camping in a different mountain range altogether. This is May long weekend. We were camping in subalpine, and we were definitely the first ones down that forest road because we were pushing snow going into the campsite. So nobody had been there since last fall, I would say. You know, again, there's about a dozen of us, and we're being like super loud and obnoxious, just fishing and yelling and playing music all day. We even had a homemade potato cannon that we were shooting potatoes across the whole lake. So it wasn't a quiet thing. So what happened next really didn't make a lot of sense. We get to nighttime, I think at the second night we were there. And I like to talk to the owls when we're out camping. So I go to the edge of the lake and I get everyone to quiet down for a minute or two. And I do my great horned owl call. And I wait a minute and I get a response from the other side of the lake. I'm like, oh, great, there's one around. So I call back to it and it calls again. But then another owl, another distance away from that one, pipes up and it starts calling. And then another one. And across the other side of the lake, another one. And there was the other lake was about a 200-yard walk through a swampy path full of skunk cabbage to a, you know, smaller lake than it. Another two or three owls started calling from over there. So by the end of it all, there was about a dozen owls calling all at once. Now, thinking back on that, I don't think that makes a lot of sense, having a dozen owls in one spot. But as I was calling these owls, the first one that started replying back to me, it kind of devolved into this mix between a chimpanzee and a kookaburra chatter. Just that really excited, fast monkey chatter. And, you know, at the time, we just thought it was a really stupid owl making a stupid sound we've never heard before. And I noticed one of the girls that was in the group, she actually got really scared and asked me to stop calling them. So I did. And we just kind of laughed it off and kept up with our night. About 4 a.m. that night, most everyone had gone to bed and there was maybe 4 of us left at the campfire just talking and still listening to music. And there was a gravel parking lot where we all had our trucks. Then a couple people had their tents right on the edge of this. And all of a sudden we heard running from across the parking lot and a really deep guttural growl. Just, and so the 4 of us kind of just turned around and all freaked out, but we didn't see a single thing. You know, we took our flashlights and we did an inspection around the campsite to see if we could find anything. But we just thought it was, you know, some deranged coyote running through our campsite. And that didn't make a lot of sense either, because I don't know an animal that would come into loud music like that. When we talked to people in the morning about it, there was some people in the tents that said they actually had something touching the outside of their tent while they were in there, but they couldn't attribute it to anything. They thought maybe it was a cougar, but that doesn't make sense either. So again, going back to listening to other witness testimony on Sasquatch Chronicles, and I start hearing all these different reports about Sasquatch sounding like owls. And I'm like, okay, well, this is very interesting. And after I've heard about a dozen different people say they've heard Sasquatch sound like owls, I hear one guy, the only other time, he said it the exact same way I said it. Sounded like a chimpanzee mixed with a kookaburra. And, you know, it just gave me chills. And I thought, you know, that's exactly what happened. We had upset a family And, you know, it was probably a juvenile or something that got all excited and broke rank and betrayed his true self. And, you know, maybe I ticked off the alpha and he came running through the campsite to get us to quiet down or get out of there. So, you know, it's only on self-reflection looking back that these things start making sense. You put Sasquatch into the equation and it makes a lot more sense than a stupid owl or a deranged coyote or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. You've kind of put all these pieces together, and I agree with you. You know, the only thing that really makes sense in when it comes down to the bottom line is, you know, it has to be Sasquatch. I mean, and you've kind of looked into, you know, other stories in that area. Now, would you mind telling us about those?
Yeah. So I actually attended your Sasquatch conference back in May, and I got a chance to speak to all the guest speakers that were there. And as I was talking to one of them in particular, he had parents that live in the same town as I do. And we were just swapping stories. And he had mentioned to me, if I wanted to ever see a Sasquatch, I had to go to a certain area and sit by a certain lake. And he would almost guarantee that I would see one. Now, this particular lake, I know exactly where it is, and it's maybe 10 kilometers away from all the other sightings that I've had on that same hillside. So he's with the BFRO, and he knows what he's talking about. So if he says that, it really clued me in that, you know, I probably got something big going on in that area.
Yeah. And for the listeners, Charles is referring to an area in British Columbia called the Shuswap area. Obviously, we're not going to give out exact details, but, you know, it's a very, very, very mountainous, forested, you know, area that has lots of lakes, lots of fish, lots of game. You know, it's a perfect spot for Sasquatch. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Tons and tons of water. I mean, every 500 yards in the forest, you can probably run into another swamp.
Yeah. So, you know, the area that he's referring to is geographically perfect for these beings to exist, you know, in you know, harmony with nature. I have to ask, though, Charles, did you go back to any of these areas, or did you go to this area that this, well, we can say his name, Blaine referred you to? Did you go back to this lake?
I've not been to the lake yet, but I did do a little bit of investigating this spring out of my own curiosity. I went back to the incident where I saw the tree shaking. I wanted to climb that hill and go up there and actually take a closer look at that tree. So I went out on a big hike and climbed to the top of that hill. I took a photo from where I was shooting just to show that tree in particular. I walked up to it, and, you know, it's like, say, 6-8 inches around at the bottom. So, you know, that's a pretty sturdy tree already. It's surrounded by other cedar tree saplings. So even if I did crest that hill, I don't think I would have seen anything hiding right at the base of the trunk because it's so foliaged in. So that was interesting. It's not like a bear would have been like pushing up against that tree and having it flail around the way it was, and it, you know, a moose doesn't make sense either, nor does a person. So as I was investigating around there, I walk a little bit north and I find an old moose bed, and it's in a rotten log, you know, that kind of powdery wood substrate. And as I'm looking at this moose bed, I notice there is about a 14-inch long track of a Sasquatch, very weathered, but I could still see it pretty plainly in this moose bed. I put my foot up against it, and I could see where the toe impression was and the edge of the foot to the heel. So that was quite exciting to see, but it such bad substrate, I couldn't have casted it if I wanted to.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, I found a few prints that, you know, were just impossible to cast. You know, either the ground was not soft enough, or, you know, didn't leave quite enough deep of an impression for casting possibilities. But, you know, even just the sight of a print is validating in itself, at least to me. You know, it's self-validating, you know, to your belief systems. Charles, it really sounds like you've dove headfirst into this. Like, you've gone to conferences, you've been to mine, you've been to one in, I can't remember which one you mentioned, but down in Washington.
I went to the Spokane Valley in Washington.
Yeah.
I got a chance to talk to Dr. Jeff Meldrum and Cliff Berrickman. And I got to toss around the idea of a couple theories about Sasquatch. And, you know, I got some promising confirmation from some of those guys that I might be on the right trail for some of this stuff.
Okay, you have to share this, because we for the listeners, we kind of discussed it a little bit before we began recording, but I'm just as interested to hear this as you guys are. So please, could you share your thoughts with us?
Well, I'm convinced, since Sasquatch seems to be a nocturnal animal, that Sasquatch sees in the ultraviolet spectrum. And there's a lot of new budding science in nature that shows this to be a very true thing for nocturnal animals. If you take an owl from, say, the Shuswap region here, and you spread out its wings and put a black light on it, some of those flight feathers will fluoresce in a certain pattern. Now, if we take that same species of owl from your town and we outstretch its wings and we put it under a black light, those same feathers on the wing will fluoresce in a different pattern. And what that does is it allows those owls to identify each other from different regions. So there's a very visual thing with this UV light that animals use to communicate. Even something that we see as very plain and mundane, as soon as you hit it with that ultraviolet light, it just really pops and gets some color and becomes significant. Like, you look at a flying squirrel, they only come out at night, and we see them as a brown-gray squirrel. But if you put them under ultraviolet light, they start turning pink and orange and all kinds of crazy colors. So there's a whole other world that we just don't see or acknowledge in our everyday life. But if you take a step back and start looking at it nature's perspective, things start making a lot of sense. Now, the way I want to apply it to Sasquatch is, I think when there's gift sites, some of those gifts are going to be very significant potentially. Now, I've never done a gifting site myself, so I don't have any of this to look at myself. But say Sasquatch gives you a rock. That rock seems very mundane and, you know, not that special of a present. But there's a type of rock called a uprolite. And a uprolite has a specific gas in it that when you hit it with the black light, it fluoresces like a bright coal out of a fire pit. Now, if those gift rocks fluoresce like that, you know, that could be very culturally significant to the Sasquatch itself, because it's not just an everyday rock. It's picking out those ones that really just pop in their vision. Like, it could be part of the Sasquatch culture.
You're going to have to help me with that one. I'm a little bit lost on that aspect of it.
So the ultraviolet light, when it hits that gas, will change, like, say, like a gray granite looking rock to look like a bright orange. So when we get these gift sites, like, say, you leave out some marbles for a Sasquatch and he might leave you like three rocks or in a bird feather. If those three rocks start glowing under an ultraviolet black light, you know, that could be significant.
Oh, okay. Do you think that this is utilized by the Sasquatch people? I mean, obviously they can see things. They're much more evolved differently than we are. I think there's no question about that. But seeing in a UV spectrum, how do you think that that's advantageous to them?
Well, I think the UV is utilized by things like nocturnal animals because it's a light spectrum that picks up in low light conditions. I mean, fish use it. Birds use it especially. And I think that Sasquatch uses it to navigate at nighttime.
Like for hunting and fishing or whatever else, or just basically seeing at night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wow. It really sounds like he went down a rabbit hole.
yeah.
When did this happen for you? Like when, you know, how did you kind of, you know, quote unquote, fall in love with the idea of studying Sasquatch?
This is a fairly new love, I would say. I mean, I never gave Sasquatch a ton of thought in my adult life. I loved the idea of it when I was a child. I mean, it's not really until I started listening to podcasts and it just re-sparked my love for the subject. And I just love the mystery of it. I love trying to understand how they tick. That's my goal. I want to understand how they work, how they see. And, you know, I'm not out to like bring in a body like some people. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
If I have a sighting, that would be great. But it's mostly just trying to like break down behavior.
What other things about the Sasquatch have you found that's very fascinating to you?
Well, if you can understand the prey, you can kind of understand the predator a little better. So take the deer species, for instance. Deer see in a certain spectrum of color all themselves. So deer species around the world cannot see red or orange. And a very common color description for Sasquatch is a reddy kind of brown. So if you're to try to translate that into what a deer sees, that would come off as another shade of green. So they're kind of blended to be the perfect camouflage for their prey. And, you know, also go down to their vocals. The Ohio howl is like a siren. And if you look at other species that respond to that same kind of sound, every time I have an ambulance drive by, every coyote within, you know, 10 miles starts going off. I think they use that to locate the coyote packs. Like, it just seems to fit, you know, in theory. Same thing with the owl call. What hunters will do with an owl call or even a crow call is they use that to locate turkeys in the early morning. You give off an owl call and the turkey will gobble from its roost. So in areas that have turkeys, a Sasquatch might use that to find breakfast.
That theory has legs, if you know what I mean. Like, there's just so much about their behavior we just don't understand. But, you know, talking to other people, you kind of get a general idea of what you should be expecting. And, you know, do you talk to a lot of other people in the Bigfoot community about your ideas and whatnot?
Yeah, I've got a couple groups that I toss around ideas with. You know, it's only this year that I've really started going out in the field and trying to put some of this to practice. But I mean, I've been hunting my whole life, so I've got a very grounded understanding of how the woods tick and what goes on out there.
Well, it really sounds like you've gotten yourself, you know, deep into the Bigfoot world. I have to ask before I let you go here, Charles, how has this changed you? I mean, how has it changed your life in general? Is it something minuscule or is it something that's kind of slowly, you know, taking hold of you?
Well, I definitely have a much more open mind to the possibilities of what is out in our world. And I think having listened to so many different accounts of people telling their stories about Sasquatch, it's made me a more empathetic person. You know, you can't just throw out everybody's account just because you don't think it's real. I think a lot of these people are telling the truth, and you know, they deserve to be heard like everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, if only 1% of these stories is true, that is significant. I mean, what everybody's found so far is enough to be a open and shut case for a murder trial. So I don't understand why it's not enough to say these things exist.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point that you make, because I've thought about that as well. I mean, even the circumstantial evidence that we have, eyewitness statements, you know, some of the videos, a lot of them are hoaxed, obviously. But, you know, the ones that are genuine, like such as the Patty film, you know, I mean, that should be case enough to say, yes, these things are out there. But, you know, I did say that was the last question, but I do have one more for you. Do you think that these beings will be acknowledged as a, you know, living, breathing society within our lifetime?
I think so, actually. I think we're right on the precipice of it.
And it just,
you know, it might just take that one more significant scientific breakthrough in behavior to really pin them down and get some repeatable behavior caught. I mean, utilizing a blacklight flashlight while you're out researching could be a significant tool. I mean, how many times have you heard about a house being slapped? If you take your black light out there and look to where that house got slapped, you might find a big handprint. I mean, even urine shows up under the black light. It's the same as any forensic tool for police investigations. So I think if you utilize that, you probably come up with a lot more evidence than even what you see with your naked eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you.
One of your previous shows, you did an interview with Doug Hychek, the producer of Monster Quest.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned a very significant thing from him, even. When he was doing an unrelated nature study, he found that bears and caribou also see in the ultraviolet spectrum, and they use it to see protein and sugar content in plants. And I think this is utilized by Sasquatch in the same way. So when you see a bear grazing on a plant and it then moves from that plant to another one 20 yards away and not continue browsing right in the initial area, it's because it's seeing the most bang for its buck food, and it's only eating that. I think Sasquatch does the same thing to keep up such a massive size. Because if you start filling your belly full of unnutritious fibers, you're going to expend more energy than you get. So if it can see those protein and sugar content with the UV vision, that would make a ton of sense.
Well, you're going to have to put a little presentation together, I think. We might have to get you speaking at the next conference.
I might. Maybe I should.
You know, it's very cool subject. I mean, you know, the thought of evolution with these beings as compared to us, we are so basic. We are such a primitive ideology of what a hominid should be. I mean, we see the basic colors. We have very limited senses in terms of, you know, touch, smell, sight, hearing, blah, blah, blah. You know, who's to say that Sasquatch evolved the same as we do? We always think of things in terms of humanity's point of view, which is terrible to do because we're so limited on knowledge, for one thing. You know, maybe Sasquatch, they have evolved to have, you know, UV vision or see in the ultraviolet spectrum, whereas we can't. You know, there's a lot of things out in nature that just evolved past us, if that makes sense to you. And you know, the whole idea of this is very, very fascinating. So thank you so much for bringing this to the table. I hope this raises a discussion amongst researchers, because I do believe this should be studied a little bit more. But Charles, thank you so much for taking the time today to come on the show.
Oh, thank you for your time, sir.
Absolutely. You definitely have to make it to the next conference. I already got it booked, and we're the ball's rolling on it, so to speak.
Consider my ticket already bought.
Cool. Right on. For the listeners, if you guys just want to hang around, we're going to close out the show. Stay there.
And we're back, everyone. We are back to pull a pin on this one, but of course we can't do that until we give Charles a huge thank you for taking the time to come on the show. Charles, buddy, thank you so much, man. I sincerely appreciate it. And your theory that you have going with the Sasquatch and the ultraviolet spectrum, that is fascinating, man. I sincerely hope that you continue researching with that and you know, bringing it forth to the leading researchers in the field and saying, hey, look at it. This is something that we might have overlooked. And I really do believe that your theory has legs and you should take the ball and run with it. So present your idea, man. Take it to conferences. Take it to other podcasts. Take it to the experts. Do something with it because I really think that there is legitimacy behind it. So thank you for bringing that to my show today. And I hope that you garner the attention that your theory deserves. So good luck, man. You're going to have to let me know how it turns out for you. But thank you again. I do appreciate it. I think that's about going to do it for this week, everyone. Once again, if you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, you can email me at NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. That's NICOLA, NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you and possibly get your encounter on the show. Also, before we go, the second annual Nicola Valley Bigfoot Conference is slated for June 1st of 2024. Details are yet to come, but trust me, the ball is rolling on that, and invitations have been extended to a certain degree. But anyway, yeah, obviously as time goes on, more information will become available, all that good stuff. So I'm going to hope to see everyone there. And until the next one, I will talk to you all later. Bye.